Andy, my dude, have you heard of the magical website builder known as Squarespace?
Ugh, not another Squarespace ad. I feel like every podcast is sponsored by them.
Hey, don't knock it until you try it. Yes, okay, it is overhyped, but actually it lives up to the hype. Squarespace is like a website fairy godmother. With a click of a button, your site transforms into a beautiful masterpiece.
A website fairy godmother? That sounds interesting. What makes it so magical?
Well, for starters, those slick templates make anyone look like a professional web designer. Pick one, customize the colors and fonts to match your brand, and voila. Plus, the drag-and-drop fluid engine is so easy, your grandma could build a site on Squarespace.
Well, she did knit me a lovely scarf last Christmas. Maybe website design is next.
Exactly. And when you're ready to sell your Nana's handmade scarves online, Squarespace has built-in e-commerce. Add a store with one click, get flexible payment options, then watch those sales roll in. And when she wants to teach others her steezy scarf skills, Squarespace's new courses feature is just the ticket. Nana can set up her curriculum and enrollments and payments in a snap and become the next e-knitting influencer.
Ugh, wow, you really sold me with the grandma angle. Sign me up for that free trial.
Just go to thenextreel.com/Squarespace and transform your site into a beautiful Squarespace masterpiece.
Well, thanks, Pete. Even though it's overhyped, Squarespace actually sounds perfect for Nana's site's needs. Appreciate the warning on the ads, though. I'll brace myself next time I listen to a podcast.
Anytime. Let me know if you need any help getting that site up and running. Andy, can you believe we've almost hit 700 episodes of The Next Reel?
I know, it's crazy. And with all the other episodes in our family of podcasts, we are well over 1,200 episodes of movie conversation. It's really pretty amazing that we've gotten to have these in-depth movie chats every week for over a decade now.
And we couldn't have done it without our loyal community of film fans. Their support over the years has meant so much.
For sure. That reminds me, we should give the merch store a shout out. Buying shirts from thenextreel.com/merch is a great way listeners can continue to support the show. Plus, they get to sport our great designs.
Absolutely. I think sometimes folks forget we have a variety of shirts, mugs, phone cases, and more available. In fact, a great place to start is with a shirt sporting the Next Reel's logo.
We also have that classic Fast Times Spicoli Surf School tee, or the weirdly popular Rusty's European Tour shirt.
The one from National Lampoon's European Vacation. Why is that so popular?
Search me, but we have sold a ridiculous number of those. I guess there are a lot of Rusty's taking trips to Europe?
We're always adding new designs based on movies we've covered, like our brand new design for A Streetcar Named Desire, featuring a streetcar named Desire. So if you want to rep your love of TNR and films, head to thenextreel.com/merch.
Every purchase helps us continue to have these weekly in-depth conversations. So visit thenextreel.com/merch today.
And as always, thanks for listening and being a part of the Next Reel community. We've got lots more great movie chats coming your way.
It's showtime, folks. Enjoy the show.
A fine Saturday morning to you, gents.
Good morning, Andy.
Hello, hello.
Good morning, Andy and Ray.
Got Ray and Ocean here. Fantastic time to chat about movies. How are you guys doing?
Terrific.
Doing well. Looking forward to online school.
Online school, more online movies, yep. Online concerts, online poetry readings from Patrick Stewart.
But who else would you rather have do it? Come on.
True. If there's anyone who can inspire me with a Shakespearean sonnet, it is Patrick Stewart.
I don't know. I'd want to hear him and then Morgan Freeman go so I could compare and contrast.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, it's interesting the way that entertainment has shifted. You know, it's how quickly things like John Krasinski's show popped up.
Right.
And the, the other show? I'm blanking. The Together Apart, where they're reuniting everybody.
Is that That's, Josh Gad?
Josh Gad's show, yeah.
Right.
Josh Gad. Is it just Together Apart? Is that what it's called? I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
But I love how quickly people jumped on the bandwagon to come up with ways to entertain. Josh Gad's Reunited Apart. That's what it is.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been fun to see what they've all been coming up with. Do you guys have any favorites? What's exciting you? Or have you been watching any of these sorts of things?
I personally have not been watching any of these, though whenever Josh Gad has been coming out with, like, the Lord of the Rings reunion, for example, and I think there was a Back to the Future one, those looked really cool to me, but I haven't checked them out yet. I've been pretty busy lately, but this past week, although this isn't like a COVID thing where people are streaming, but I did kind of binge the new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And that was pretty good.
Were you a fan of the original?
Yes. I love Robert Stack's voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so perfect for those shows, wasn't it?
Yeah, but this one is a little different because there's no host. It's just like purely a documentary, and the only people that talk are the interviewees, and then there's text that will appear at the end and beginning of each show talking about what's going on. It was different, but it was still good. I hope they do more.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I found that I've been trying to take some advantage of this time in that there's not a lot of good new movies and things coming out now. You know, like I recently saw the Charlize Theron Old Guard on Netflix when that one came out. But beyond that, what I'm really kind of doing more of is catching up on, you know, those shows that are on your list that you were going to watch at the time, but then you didn't, you know, for whatever reason, because you were busy or
story
something else
of
came
my
on or
life.
Some other better show. Exactly. So lately I've been catching up on the old, well, it's not that old, but a couple years old BBC show called Killing Eve.
Oh,
yeah. It stars Sandra Oh, and it's very good, and it's, you know, they're, each season's only 8 episodes, so it's nice and bingeable, and so caught up with that, enjoying that, and then I finally got around to, you know, catching up on Gotham, because I bailed on Gotham probably around season 3.
I'm right there with you.
So I kind of just picked it back up, and I was like, you know, this isn't a horrible show. You know, there's a lot there. They're doing interesting things with the characters. It's not bad to watch.
I think that's on the poster, right? This isn't a horrible show.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, yes, watch this. It is not horrible. But it was, you know, so I find I'm, you know, doing that, or, you know, catching up on things like that, or, you know, showing my kid an older movie that he's never seen before. But there's, you know, outside of, like I said, The Old Guard, which was a decent movie that Netflix just recently put out, I haven't really seen too many new things lately.
Yeah, it's always a challenge to you know, track down the new stuff these days. I mean, I know it's popping up out there, and I did finally watch Birds of Prey, so I caught up with that, which I thought was enjoyable enough. I didn't love it, I keep trying to, you know, track down stuff. My library's open. They're doing you can pick stuff up through curbside, and so I just got The Way Back, the Ben Affleck basketball coach movie. So
okay,
I'm looking forward to checking that one out. So it's like kind of catching up on the newer releases that I had missed. Right. But yeah, it is getting to be slim pickings as far as the new stuff. But things still get released. I mean, we've got some trailers to talk about, obviously. So movies are getting pushed out there, right?
Yeah. We'll have to give Birds of Prey to Rob and Mandy to fix.
I didn't think there were casting problems with that. I actually thought the cast was great. The story was
it felt more like they were trying to set up a future movie or a sequel, or, you know, try to build a trilogy or a universe there. But, you know, DC seems to still be unable to figure out how to do that appropriately, where when the movie's over, you really want to know what happens next, and you want to see them add other characters and you know, and see other stories with it. And so, you know, I'm eternally optimistic that DC will get their act together, that they will start, you know, bringing out movies that really make you want to know what happened next and see it a whole universe. But with Birds of Prey, it was a fun little movie, but, you know, while it's set up for a sequel, I didn't really find that I cared to see what happened next.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, especially because Margot Robbie is just so good.
She is.
Yes. Like,
she just gives it so much of her all, which is awesome.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. I've not seen Birds of Prey, but she was the one saving grace for me in Suicide Squad. So,
right. Yeah.
Yes.
Is she back in the
The Suicide Squad, whatever the sequel's being called. Do you know?
Yeah. Yes, I believe she's actually the star, because I think Will Smith is not doing it. And so then she becomes more the big actor, the focal point of it. And so, yes, from what little I did catch up on, she is in it. But there's, you know, the last articles I read about it were all talking about story development, meaning they weren't really sure what they wanted to do with the Suicide Squad yet. Hmm.
Well, I'm sure James Gunn has something figured out. He seems to have a pretty good sense of how things are going to play. I'm just looking on IMDb to see who's in it. Let's see. We've got Rick Flagg. Is that a character you guys are familiar with? Joel Kinnaman's playing Rick Flagg.
Yeah, he was in the first one. He was the military
right.
guy.
Oh, okay.
That's
how brilliant. Forgettable that first movie was. Like, I, other than Harley Quinn and Joker, and honestly, I forgot Will Smith was even in it. Because what was his character? Like, I don't even remember what his character was.
He was Deadshot.
These characters mean nothing to me. That's the problem with that.
Yeah, he was actually the star.
He sure was. Boy, Will Smith, what happened to you, Will? Jeez, was a point you were like the box office draw. Now I see a movie coming out with Will Smith, and I'm like, who needs to see that?
So,
what's the last good Will Smith movie, you guys?
You didn't love Gemini Man? So,
I saw the trailer for it. I saw the trailer for it. Okay, he's gotten to a point where I watch the trailers, I don't even see the movies anymore. Okay. That's what's happened to Will Smith.
Honestly, I think the last semi-good Will Smith movie I saw was maybe The Pursuit of Happiness.
That was fine. Wow. That felt very Hollywood, but it was fine.
It wasn't anything great, but it was okay.
Yeah, I'm just looking down his list. I skipped the latest Bad Boys movie.
That one wasn't that great.
It was
better than Bad Boys 2, though.
Well, yeah, that's good. Spies in Disguise, honestly, I probably should have taken my son to see it. He wanted to go see that one, but I skipped it. Gemini Man skipped. I saw like the last half of Aladdin with my kids because they were watching on Disney Plus, and I sat down just out of curiosity. Wasn't very into it.
Oh, you didn't see it when it was in theaters?
I didn't. No. I think my daughter went with some friends.
Aladdin I liked. That I thought was actually a really well done movie. What? I was very skeptical. Yeah, I know. I was skeptical that they would be able to pull off the songs and the music and everything, because I really do like the animated Aladdin. I think is a great movie. But no, I thought they did a really good job of it, and that told the story well. The new music was good. It was humorous and it was entertaining. And I liked it. And they set up for a sequel that I don't know that they're going to do. I thought Aladdin was pretty good.
I got a hard disagree with you, Stir. I thought it was pretty. To quote Triumph, the insult comic dog, I thought it was good to poop on.
Well, yes, you're definitely a different camp.
Yeah, I didn't see much of it, but I will say, whoever the guy was that they cast to play Jafar was like so flimsy. I'm like, this is the bad guy? Like, he just didn't have any screen presence. I thought that was pretty lame. So that's one that I'm like curious to see. I feel like I really want to, because Guy Ritchie directed it. I'm like, I feel like I should watch the rest of it. I just have not been motivated to do so.
Honestly, it doesn't feel very much like a Guy Ritchie movie. I don't know if it's because it's over Disney-fied. Maybe the studio had way too much to put on him as a filmmaker, but it really did not feel much like at all like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize it was Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie movies to me are always British mobsters killing people. That's what I'm going for, and that's what I want to see. When he puts those movies out, I love all of them.
You know, did either of you see Bright, the Netflix movie that Will Smith did?
No.
Because that's getting a sequel. I didn't realize.
Yeah, I saw it. I thought it was – my impression of the movie really was more it was a good idea that just didn't quite grab you. Didn't execute it quite right. You know, the idea was good, but, you know, the movie was so-so. I mean, you could watch it. I think, I probably was mildly entertained for the first half of it. But then after that, it kind of fell apart with the story and kind of what they were trying to put together. It just didn't work.
Yeah. Just looking back at Will Smith's career, I'm just like, okay, so his most recent one was Bad Boys for Life. Let me just read you the last, I'll read the last 15 years of films of his. Bad Boys for Life, going backwards. Spies in Disguise, Gemini Man, Student of the Year 2, which is just a special appearance. Aladdin, Bright, Collateral Beauty, Suicide Squad, Concussion, Focus, Winter's Tale, Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, After Earth, Men in Black 3, 7 Pounds, Hancock, I Am Legend, The Pursuit of Happiness, and Hitch was 2005.
Oh, wow.
I tell you, in that whole lot, I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then Suicide Squad. Like, 6 of the early ones, and then Suicide Squad. And then I've just kind of skipped the rest. And of those, actually, Men in Black 3 was the one I liked the most. I actually thought they did a really good job with that, with that third film.
Nice. Have either of you seen Concussion? Because I was curious about that one, but I never got around to it.
I didn't hear great things about it, but then my sister, like, she's just like, oh, he was so good. The movie was so good. I was like, oh, really? So that's one that it's kind of like back on my list. I'm like, okay, maybe that one's worth checking out.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll see. But you know, I don't know. I guess I just hope that he gets himself back on track. Cause I just always loved watching him, and I just feel like he's, you know, I don't know. I feel like his career's taken kind of a strange turn. Coming up, he's got Bad Boys 4 has been announced, something called The Council, which I'm unfamiliar with, and then King Richard, which is kind of an interesting thing to see, which actually, it's not Shakespeare. This is I thought it was, but it's a look at how tennis superstars Venus and Serena Williams became who they are after the coaching from their father, Richard Williams.
Okay. I think I've heard of that, actually, that was coming.
Yeah.
I had not. So that's pretty interesting. And then The Council, which is in pre-production. This is the never-before-told story of a crime syndicate consisting of 7 African-American men who ruled Harlem in the 70s and early 80s, focusing on Nicky Barnes, dubbed Mr. Untouchable by the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And Will Smith is playing Nicky Barnes.
Is it just me, or does it just seem like he tried in his career to branch out to more dramatic roles, and it was really hit and miss, and it just didn't have as good of a, it just didn't seem to do as well as whenever he was more comedic or action oriented, like in Men in Black or Independence Day type of things. Is that just me, or?
Well, I mean, I think he's definitely he's a great actor. If you look at him in Ali, or even going back to like 6 Degrees of Separation, I mean, I think he can deliver on the dramatic performances, but I just feel like, I don't know if it's just a choice of what he's picking. I don't know what it is, but I mean, The Pursuit of Happiness was fine. I thought that was actually a pretty good movie. Just a little Hollywoodish for me, but
okay, fair enough.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm one of the few people who saw 7 Pounds. I actually kind of liked that one too. I thought that was actually a pretty interesting movie. So I mean, you know, he does it, but then there are things like Collateral Beauty, and I just remember when we watched the trailer, it was one, I think it was a trailer pick, and it was just one that we were all laughing at because it was just such a bad looking trailer. I didn't even see the movie because the trailer was so bad.
Now you're making me want to go see the trailer.
It's one of those ones where it's just like, it just was like forcing its emotions on you the whole time. It was a terrible trailer. You should watch it. You should definitely go watch it. I'd love your thoughts. Okay.
Well, I'll commit to the trailer. But that's about it.
There you go.
Yeah. And of the early stuff from that 15 years ago, I did enjoy Hancock, right? I thought that was an enjoyable movie. I get that the movie has problems, and the problems are obvious. But, you know, I was able to roll with it enough that I did enjoy it.
That's actually a good point. It was a problematic movie, but they did some really interesting things with it that I was like, you know what? That would be something I would watch again. It's not great, but it was definitely fun and pretty interesting.
Yeah. I find I'm a sucker for Jason Bateman in just about anything he does. So I really enjoyed him in the movie, you know, playing the straight man. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's After Earth. Anyway,
yeah, moving on. I completely skipped that one.
Yeah, right. Oh, so, that's terrible. Yeah. What news do we have? Let's see. We had a great big deal that Universal and AMC agreed to a little shaking hands after their after they went to fisticuffs over Trolls World Tour. They kind of came to this 17-day theatrical window agreement where they were going to basically say, hey, you know, after a movie's been playing in your theaters for 17 days, we can go to premium video on demand That's where you're paying like $20 a ticket. And then I guess AMC is going to get a cut of that. And that's kind of the deal they came to. It's really interesting. And this is something that I think a lot of people in Hollywood are waiting to see what other studios are going to do now with other theater chains, because this could potentially create drastic shifts in the way that the business is run moving forward, COVID or not. So interesting. Do you guys have any thoughts on this?
I think that it'll generate more money. I think that they're going to finally do things the right way in this regard. That when you really look at it, if the theaters still get the, you know, the monopoly for the first 17 days, most movies now are made to be, you know, have big openings. You know, they're going to have a big open. The second week, hopefully, is just, you know, not too big of a drop off. But then by the third week, you know, they're going to, you see significant drop offs and then people go into the theaters. And so, you know, for, because most of the money from a theater standpoint is already generated in that 17 days, to be able to shift over and quickly within, you know, 3 weeks time, go to a premium video on demand format makes it where some people that, you know, may not want to go to a theater or, you know, enjoy that experience, you know, especially in today's times. But if you don't want to go to theater that experience, you may still then, you know, pony up the $20 to see it in the comfort of your home, own home after it's only been out for a few weeks. And so you can avoid the news and not get, you know, spoiled, have the movie spoiled before you're able to see it. And so by having this agreement, I think it makes more money for both parties, that the movies that are really big, they can get their big money and then still get more money afterwards. And some movies, you know, have horrible opening weekends. And, you know, those movies then can hurry up and get out of theaters and then hopefully make more money in the on-demand market.
Sure.
Yeah. And I guess theoretically, you know, because I know studios were concerned about having to basically pay for marketing twice, paying the first time and then a second time 3 months later after people have kind of forgotten about it. Hey, it's out now digital. Now that window is shortened, so they're not necessarily having to kind of you know, push as much advertising out there. So theoretically saving some money there. So
yeah, I would think that in the next, you know, year, couple of years, this will become the norm. That things will come, you know, that they'll have a, I don't know if it'll all be 17 days or how many days of the window it is, but that they'll bring a shorter window to bring things out to you know, on demand and video on demand. Because there are, you know, there's only certain movies there that you really want to go to the theater for, you know, because if the theater experience to me is always more of a, if it has big sound, big explosions, if the visuals and the audio from a theater are, you know, really going to change how the movie, you know, how you enjoy the movie, then I enjoy going to a theater. But, you know, a lot of times, you know, the other dramatic movies I like, right? So if you're watching a dramatic movie where it's predominantly dialogue driven, it's a great and interesting story, but it's just as good in the theater as it is in my house. Right. And so I tend to wait on those until they, you know, come to where they're on demand. And so shortening this window and using this model, I believe that all of the studios are going to go to it.
Definitely looks to me like this is kind of a testing the waters sort of experiment. Kind of, because if you think about it, it seems to me anyway that with this whole COVID-19 thing, it probably has opened up the eyes of those at Universal or at AMC and saying, oh, look, there's fruit to this whole VOD thing. And so naturally you would want to test out, okay, well, which would make us more money if we continued to theatrically release these films? Or do you think this is going by the wayside? Maybe we should just skip straight to video on demand. And I mean, I hope that that doesn't become the case because I love going to the theater. And it also brings up a question for me, you know, with this 17-day window, what happens whenever you get a movie that's ridiculously popular? Like, for example, Titanic, when that originally came out and wound up staying in theaters for somewhere around a year. You know, what happens with something like that?
Well, yeah. The way I read it and understood it was, if something like that would occur, then the theaters, you know, the studios and the theaters could agree to leave the movie in theaters for a longer period of time and delay the video on demand. Okay. But really the 17-day window just means that after 17 days, the studios have the option of moving it to video on demand. Right. So they don't have to. If you have a movie that is, you know, a big box office hit and has legs, you know, then, you know, like a Titanic or like, you know, say how Star Wars was when the New Hope, that Star Wars, when it came out, you know, with things like that, then, you know, that window would grow longer and then it wouldn't be video on demand for a few months. But for most movies, you know, after a couple weeks, the theaters really, as far as your theater going audience, they've really gone and seen the movie. And so to then capitalize on those of us that would potentially be waiting until it becomes on demand and getting us earlier, you know, makes a lot of sense to me.
Well, and then with the video on demand, now tell me if I read this right, if I understood it correctly, when it does go to video on demand, these Universal films will only be available on AMC's streaming service. Like, they won't immediately be available, like, say, on iTunes or Movies Anywhere or wherever people rent their digital movies from. Does that sound right to you?
I mean, it would be the, because they're calling it the premium video on demand. That's where you're paying like the $20, gotcha. Which, you know, if you watched Trolls World Tour when it came out, that's what you paid for that. Or, you know, there were a couple others that were released that way.
The Hunt did that.
Yeah, The Hunt and Emma, there were a few.
Okay.
Bloodshot. And so it's one of those things where they're releasing it that way, you know, so that they can still make a bigger buck rather than just the, you know, $5 or $9 rental or whatever it's going to be on iTunes.
Right.
So just because, I mean, you know, people are going to generally watch it all together. And so they got to get some of that ticket money back.
So that makes me wonder how long after the initial 17-day theatrical window, how long will they do PVOD, premium video on demand, and before they do like a wider release, say on disc or other streaming services?
I would imagine they'll probably just keep it running, you know, for quite a while, you know, just, I mean, as long as it's making money, it could be the full 3 months like it had been before they release it, the rest of the digital realm. And honestly, it's just like, my hunch is it's going to be like any other theatrical release. Once ticket sales start tapering off, they're going to shift.
Okay.
That makes sense. I mean, it's just, I think at this point it's the Wild West and they're all just figuring this out as they
another
go
Will
along.
Smith movie.
That's the wild west. Yeah. So yeah, it's just one of those. I don't know. I'm a theater lover. It makes me sad that shifts like this happened. It's inevitable, but you know, I don't know. I feel like there's something in theaters, like the theater experience for me, whether it's a big movie or a small movie, I just love the experience. It's so like 100% of your focus rather than sitting in your living room. And you know, you're at 75% because the dog needs to be let out, and you're going to get snacks in the kitchen, and somebody's doing dishes, you know, whatever it is. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Will be an interesting to see unfold.
It will be, definitely will. Let's see. Dave Franco is going to be starring as Vanilla Ice in a biopic. Interesting. Yes. Interesting.
Yes, I'm interested in this in really, you know, a couple ways. One, I don't know anyone that's really a true big Vanilla Ice fan, but I don't also at the same time don't know anyone who doesn't like Ice Ice Baby, right? It's a great song. And it's one of those things of where, you know, it caught the zeitgeist at the time. It was a big song and it was huge. And over time, people just turned on Vanilla Ice for the song, right? And so it seems to be like, you know, all he did is make a giant hit record, and we just crucified him for it, right? So I like, you know, then so I like the idea of this movie in that that, you know, they're gonna do a biopic so they can, you know, see the struggle of what it is to become Vanilla Ice, but that they apparently are also going to use the Disaster Artist, you know, formula, right? Because, you know, Dave Franco was in the Disaster Artist, you know, with his brother. And so, and he's also, Dave Franco's the one who's going to play Vanilla Ice, but that in the Disaster Artist, that movie was prime, if you saw it, to be made fun of, right? They could have taken that movie a different way and just completely made fun of the character that made the Disaster Artist, and, you know, and made it where there was kind of like a pointing, laughing at him. And they really showed that more honestly, and then made it where it was a much more heartfelt, humorous movie. And that if they use that same formula in that same way for the Vanilla Ice, I think that, you know, we're going to enjoy at least the song. You know, we'll enjoy the one song because, you know, everybody does. But that, you know, the movie itself should still also be something enjoyable and entertaining, because it'll take the character seriously and not just be a movie to make fun of Vanilla Ice as much as really kind of show what his life was like, what it took to get to where he was, and also make a better, heartfelt movie. So I am looking forward to what they produce with this.
You know, I only know two Vanilla Ice songs, and the other song I know...
That's more than most people.
Yeah, that's two?
The other song I know I like way more than Ice Ice Baby, and I will be extremely disappointed if it is not in the biopic, and that is the Ninja Rap from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
That's funny.
I am the loser that listens to that song at full volume with my car windows down.
That's funny. You're that guy.
Yeah.
That's too funny. I enjoyed that song at the time. I haven't really thought much about Vanilla Ice. I do wonder how far it's going to go, if it's going to get to the point in his career where he's doing home repair shows or whatever it is he's doing now. I guess we'll have to see when they can finally actually get started making it, because the production has been postponed until further notice.
Is it weird that I hope Dave Franco gets a prosthetic chin? Because I always I always think of Vanilla Ice and that unusually square chin of his.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and find out. Last but not least, Quibi.
Oh,
we can't have a show without talking Quibi. And, this is just an interesting little note. Quibi apparently is going to win an Emmy. Because apparently they have made enough content to flesh out several categories. So they are 80% of the options in those categories. Those would be Outstanding Actor in a Short-Form Comedy or Drama Series and Outstanding Actress in a Short-Form Comedy or Drama Series. In both of those, they have 4 out of 5 of the slots filled, not to mention other slots. So people are saying, hey, you know what? They may fail, but at least they're going to walk away with an Emmy.
Who knows? If they do walk away with an Emmy, maybe more people will be inclined to check it out.
Yeah, maybe. I did actually cancel my subscription. It was about to, I got their email reminder, hey, your paid subscription is going to start next week. I'm like, nope.
Well,
sorry.
I think it would be better. And anyone who can hear the sound of my voice that votes for an Emmy, pick the one that is not from Quibi. Make it where they shut them out in the Emmys too. So that way that this, that would be a better story than they win an Emmy, that they should have won an Emmy, but did not.
That would actually be really funny.
I think Quibi's like that kid in preschool that just sits in the corner and eats glue. And everyone just points at him like, everyone stay away from that kid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, geez. Well, guys, let's do some trailers.
All right.
Ray, you get to go first because you put your pick in the docket first. So
I'm good like that.
Yes, you are.
All right. So the movie that I picked is about a British Army doctor who comes back from a war thinking that she has PTSD, only to discover that there is a more daunting malevolence at work, making the life that she knew unfamiliar.
Dun, dun, dun.
This movie is called The Unfamiliar.
Welcome home.
Mommy!
Why don't you tell me what happened to you in Marja?
I've been seeing things. Hallucinations. And it's not PTSD. I've been taking the pills.
That's the thing about war. Always leave scars, and not all of them are physical.
I thought it looked really interesting. I'm kind of on the fence with this movie because there are parts of this trailer that almost looked like a new Hereditary, which I thought was just a phenomenal film. And then there are other parts of this trailer that made me think, wow, that looks like that could be extremely corny and bad. So I have no idea what to think about this movie, but I'm definitely intrigued enough to check it out when it comes out. What did you guys think of the trailer?
I was curious, the title intrigued me because I'm like, okay. Cause I mean, there's also The Familiar, not that that's a movie title, but just the fact that in the world of witches and stuff, there's a thing called Their Familiar. And so I'm like, I wonder if it's a play on that. And so I was kept watching the trailer. Once I knew it was a horror, I'm like, okay, is there going to be something that is kind of like the opposite of what a familiar is or something? And so it didn't quite seem like it was going that way, but it kept me thinking about that. And so I don't know, it piques my curiosity. I hope there's more to it than just kind of like a creepy haunted situation sort of film.
Sure.
Yeah. I find that I'm a picky horror film watcher. There's, you know, I'm not huge into the genre, and some of those I do like, but you know, for the most part, I don't watch a lot of it. And this one seemed to me, I wasn't as interested in seeing it, partly because, you know, there was the initial part of it when she's, you know, coming home from the army and she has PTSD, you know, that looks like, okay, we can take that story a bunch of different ways. But then once it switches to horror, then it becomes, is she possessed? Are they going to have an exorcism? You know, are we going to have, you know, a priest show up? And, you know, it just seemed to kind of go like it was going a really odd left turn, and then it was going to have a lot of jump scares. And so, yeah, so for me, I looked at that and I thought, I'm sure there will be people that like that, but that definitely I'm not enough into horror movies for it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, this movie is directed by Hank Pretorius. I don't know who he is, but I love his last name. And it stars Jemima West, Christopher Dane, and Rebecca Hansen. It runs 89 minutes and is set to be released on August 21st. No rating as of yet that I could find.
As of yet. Yeah. Okay. Well, what do you have for us, Ocean?
Well, my movie's the trailer starts off with hearing the quote, "God, land, oil. It is often said wars waged over one of these threes, and I didn't come to West Virginia for God." And the voice that you're hearing saying that is Vinnie Jones. And basically the movie is called The Big Ugly.
God, land, oil. It's often said war is waged over just these three. I didn't come here to West Virginia for God. Back in London, Harris is the top man. But here, deep in the hills of Appalachia, Harris has a mate, an oil man, Preston.
Look at you.
So here we are, invested in an oil operation. Preston needs cash flow. Harris needs a cleaner.
I got him loaned.
And in the movie, you can tell from the trailer, he stars as a bodyguard / hitman who goes with his boss, Harris, who's played by Malcolm McDowell, to Virginia in order to broker a money laundering deal with his partner in West Virginia named Preston, played by the great character actor Ron Perlman. And then really you can get most of the movie from the trailer. You know, Vinny brings his girlfriend or wife, Fiona, with him, and she inadvertently gains the attention of, you know, some of Preston's guys, and then she gets killed. And then at that point, Vinnie Jones can't tolerate that. He's going to have to seek revenge and, you know, kill a bunch of people and ultimately take the whole thing down, right? And so I like the trailer and liked it because I love the straightforward action films, and this is 100% a straightforward action films. This is not Shakespeare in the Park, and after watching this, the ending, it won't surprise you at all, but it does look like, you know, fun. Looks like a fun time for about 90 minutes on my couch. So what'd you guys think? What'd you guys think of it?
You know, I watched this trailer for The Big Ugly, and the first half of the trailer almost seemed like a Guy Ritchie kind of vibe. And then the second half looked like one of those generic action / revenge stories in the same vein as what Stallone and Schwarzenegger have been putting out lately. You know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And that's exactly what it is. Yes.
That, and yeah. All I could keep thinking about was, I'm the juggernaut.
Right. I know. Yeah. This is one where, you know, at first I was disappointed that it wasn't the third movie in the big trilogy after The Big Short and The Big Sick. I was just like, but, you know, it's one of those movies that looks like very much just such a straightforward action movie that it just, like, nothing interests me. I'm just like, I don't know. there's nothing here for me. I love the actors. You know, I think that, you know, Malcolm McDowell, Ron Perlman, even Vinnie Jones, I think that they can be fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Ron Perlman said, you know, I shouldn't think too much about this because I don't think I generally think that he makes good choices with his films, but he said he knew he would be starring in it by the time he reached page 11 of the script for this. So maybe there's gold. I don't know. It wasn't for me though, but yeah. So when is this one opening? Or I it should is, say, when did it open? It's
available for a video on demand on July 31st. So,
which was yesterday.
Last night, yes. You can rent it on iTunes or Prime Video, and there's a smattering of other video on demand providers that you can rent it from as well. So,
cool. Well, that leaves me. For my film, I picked an interesting-looking thriller that seems like it's in the same camp as Buried or films where, I guess you could say, where people are cold, like, what is the one where they're up in the ski lift where they get trapped on that? Right. I can't remember. Frozen, not the Disney one, but the other Frozen. There is a certain element to some of these films that creates a very incredible sense of dread. In the particular case of this one, it is because a married couple there, I don't know what's going on. I'm assuming that, you know, they're out driving and they pull off to the side of the road because the snow is so bad, and they wake up and the blizzard was so bad that the car is buried and they are frozen inside it. They can't get out of the car.
Hello?
Okay. I think we're snowed under.
How's she doing?
She keeps on cooking. She's okay.
Any ideas how we're getting out of here?
I don't think we should get out of here.
It's not really much of a plan. We're gonna freeze in here.
And you don't think we're gonna freeze out there?
And we have light. I just need you to trust me, okay?
Okay.
The film is Centigrade, directed by Brendan Walsh, starring Brendan Walsh, Daley Nixon, and Mavis Simpson-Ernst, the three people in the whole cast. And basically, you know, this poor guy and his pregnant wife are stuck inside this frozen vehicle, and they're trying to decide, should we wait it out? Should we break a window and climb out through the snow with the possibility that you're going to freeze to death out in the cold? What should we do? And that's basically the premise. And I think there's something really inherently creepy about this. And it looks like it goes down kind of a dark turn toward the end as it gets a little psychologically crazy and stuff. But I don't know. There's something in it that seemed interesting to me. What'd you guys think?
Dude, the first 10 seconds where all you see is snow and you hear the muffled cries for help sent chills down my spine. I mean, that alone is getting a watch from me.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Yeah.
What about you, Ocean?
Yeah, no, it looked interesting, kind of like it made me think of Alive, only insofar as, you know, you're trapped in a cold environment and don't really know how to get out. Found myself inexplicably, I found myself distracted with, well, how did the car get buried in snow to begin with? And that, you know, that really took a lot of my focus from the trailer. I do think that the dark turn of it is going to be interesting to see, you know, how far do they go? Do they go to where one of them just, you know, because the trailer left me with the impression that one of them may kill the other, right? And so, like, do they actually go that far? Is that going to be near the end? Or is that just, you know, kind of part of it where they eventually use them for food until, you know, until frost happens? So it's one of the things where I think I'm interested enough to maybe check it out. I don't know yet if, you know, I'm not sure if it'll be for me, but I'm definitely going to give it a watch.
Yeah, it looks pretty interesting. It's going to have a limited theatrical release, I guess, maybe at drive-ins and stuff, August 28th. And then that's here in the US. And then its DVD premiere is over in the UK, August 31st, a few days later. I don't know if the limited release here in the US on the 28th also is going to be streaming, but it will be out there, so keep an eye out for it. And that is Centigrade. All right, well, let's do the IMDb game. We'll play a few rounds of this, see if you guys know your stuff as far as IMDb's, the way that IMDb's algorithms decide what people are known for. What do you think?
Someday someone on this show will master the algorithm.
Someday somebody will. That's right. So I figured, just so for those of you who aren't familiar with the IMDb game, IMDb always lists four films that any person on IMDb is, as they say, known for. Sometimes it's a popular movie. Sometimes it's a movie that makes a lot of money. But there's always some obscure choices in there. And nobody really knows what this crazy IMDb algorithm is. So first up, let's try it out with, considering we're talking Friday, we're in the middle of our Friday series on the show, let's look at Ice Cube. What four films would you guys say Ice Cube is known for?
Friday.
Friday, yeah. Friday's easy. Yeah, definitely that one.
What else?
Boys in the Hood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that's two.
Yeah. Friday, Boys in the Hood.
You know, I don't know much about his film career.
Which Triple X was he in?
I will tell you, his acting career has 41 films in it. Yes. 41. Right. Very busy.
Yeah, boy. No, he has a lot of stuff. And so he's been in a lot of things.
Including John Carpenter, I might add.
Oh, wasn't he in Anaconda?
He was in Anaconda.
Was he in Anaconda?
Yes, he was.
Well, I think that be the Triple X movie where he was the star. That was probably the biggest
Triple X movie. State of the Union State or of the Union, Triple X right. Return of Xander Cage.
State of the Union. Return of Xander Cage was Vin Diesel. He was only in it for like 2 seconds at the end.
Okay.
And then they, with Kevin Hart, he did those ride along movies.
Was he in? Oh.
Right. So these are the four that I think. So Ray, let me know if you think should be something taken out and changed.
Was he in Barbershop?
He was in Barbershop.
Okay. So no, Barbershop would be bigger than that. So then that would be Friday, Barbershop, the Triple X, State of the Union, and Boys in the Hood.
I'll go with that.
Okay. You guys are 50%. The four are Friday, which you got, Boys in the Hood, which you got, Ride Along, which you mentioned and then you bailed on.
Oh.
Last but not least, Next Friday.
Next Friday?
Go figure.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Why is Barbershop not on there? Why is Three Kings not on there? Yeah. Ghosts of Mars is the one that I was saying from John Carpenter. He was in the 21-22.
Ghosts of Mars?
Yes, he was in Ghosts of Mars.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's not good. It's not good. He was in the 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street movies. I mean, Fist Fight recently, so he's very busy, very busy. Next up, how about Chris Tucker?
Well, I think you'd have to do the movie that he did with Jackie Chan. It's a trilogy.
Rush Hour. And Rush Hour 2, because I believe IMDb will put both of those on there.
Friday.
Oh yeah, he is in Friday. Yeah, so Friday.
there's a reason Friday. I pulled his name up.
Yeah, he is in Friday. Yeah, so Friday. Oh well, I don't know because he also has there's Dead Presidents, where he was bigger than that, and then I love The Fifth Element.
Oh yeah, Fifth Element for sure.
I don't know if that would make the.
I'd be surprised if that wasn't on there. Then again, this is IMDb.
I'd kind of be surprised if it was. If he's on, so yeah, so Friday. So I'm willing to go with you with Friday, but I think that I think it'll be one of those weird things where it'll be Rush Hour and Rush Hour 2, and then Friday, and then what was the other one? What was the one you said?
Rush Hour.
No.
I'm sorry. The Fifth Element.
Yeah, Fifth Element or Dead Presidents? Which one was bigger? I would think Dead Presidents. But yeah, exactly. Well, they were both right. They were both middle of the road from a commercial success movie, right? And so, if they're saying this is what he's known for, then you have to say which of these two is a more memorable performance by him. Which, I mean, the answer is The Fifth Element, but I don't know if Dead Presidents would be more because when Dead Presidents came out, he wasn't really known before that.
What about Jackie Brown? Didn't he have a role in Jackie Brown?
He did.
I just watched that.
He died in the first 20 minutes of that.
Still, that's kind of a big movie.
All right, so we got the first two Rush Hour movies and Friday, and then you're stuck on the fourth one. Is either Fifth Element or Dead Presidents? Is that what you're – or are you guys leaning on Dead Presidents?
Which one do you think, Ray?
I would think Fifth Element.
Okay, we'll go Fifth Element.
All right, well, you got 50% again. First one up is Rush Hour 2, and then second one is Rush Hour. So you were right about that.
I'm sorry. Third one,
third one, Silver Linings Playbook. He had a bit part in that.
Even though he was in that.
Yes, he is. He's the friend who's escaping the mental institution. So
okay.
And then Money Talks is the fourth one.
Oh, that was his one main starring vehicle. Yeah, it was funny for what it was, but it was one of those movies where it was funny. You watch it one time, and then that's enough.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to our last little bit with our lists. What do you think?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
So this week we are talking about next Friday. And so the options thrown out there into our Discord group for people to choose from were, I don't have it in front of me. I should have. Hold on. The options thrown out were hip hop in film, movies with days of the week in the title, and non-numbered sequels. We had a little bit of a kind of a back and forth on those bottom two for a little while. And then finally, non-numbered sequels is the one that ended up taking it. So we are here to talk about non-numbered sequels. And Ray, you put your trailer up first, so you get to go first. Take it away.
All right. So as soon as I knew this was what we were going to do, I had to do this movie because it is the fourth movie in a series, but from the title, you would think it was the first. And that movie is 2008's Rambo.
That is funny.
It's not a terrible movie, but I had to pick it because of the title. If you do follow the series, it's the one where, you know, he's old now. and he's basically working, taking people in his boat up and down a river in Thailand, and he winds up helping a group of American missionaries who get into trouble in Burma with the military there. Very CGI heavy, that movie, but not terrible if you're into Stallone and action and whatnot.
Did they do another one after that? I lose track.
Last Blood.
They did one more. It was Rambo Last Blood.
Of course they did.
Yes, Last Blood was after that. But I did not even remember Rambo. I remember I've seen First Blood and First Blood Part 2. But yeah, I forgot that there was a third one between that and Last Blood. So I thought it was just First Blood, you know, Next Blood, Last Blood.
There was Rambo,
First Blood.
Right, First Blood, and then First Blood, Rambo Part 2, I think. And then Rambo 3.
The other way around. Rambo, First Blood, Part 2.
Okay. So, yeah. I'm doing a rule with my list here where not only am I not doing numbers, but I'm also not doing colons.
Oh, interesting. All right. Let's see. I wonder. Actually, I don't think I have any colons either, but there certainly is. I potentially do, depending on if something is stolen. So, all right, Ocean, what's your first one?
My first one was it's a movie where there are girls that are kidnapped, and they are kidnapped by I'm just going to start spoiling already. James McAvoy, who has multiple distinct personalities, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you're watching it, you know, they're trying to figure out who, you know, not only with all of his different personalities, which personality they're talking to, how they can make friends with some to try to maybe get out and save their own lives, which ones they should be scared of that may, in fact, you know, kill them, you know, why they're being kidnapped. They don't even really know that either. And that, you know, the whole movie, it is a good movie about not only the psychological exploration of, hey, what it's like to be kidnapped by someone with 23 different personalities. But then in the last minute, you find out that you're watching a sequel. And that movie is Split, which was a sequel to Unbreakable. Hmm. And so that was my first choice of the non-numbered sequels, because I really not only enjoyed the movie, but then I did enjoy the pleasant surprise at the end of it that I'm watching a sequel.
Sure, yeah. Pretty twisty.
Yes, very twisty.
Nice. For my first one, I am going with, I feel like this has to be a steal. I'm surprised it's not yet. Maybe it will be, but I am doing, it is a sequel. Okay. This is a franchise that had let's see, the first three movies, well, I should say the first movie was titled, its title. The second and third movies used Roman numerals. The fourth and fifth movies used numbers. The sixth movie, I think at one point had a number and then they dropped it. The seventh movie, they kind of erased some of those past movies and they used a whole new titling scheme. And then it had a sequel, which was just a colon sequel. And then there was a remake of the first movie that was just titled the same as the first movie. And it had a second movie, which was titled the same as the original second movie. And then there was a new sequel that was named the same as the first movie of the whole thing. And it is, of course, Halloween. Yeah. How complicated they make this franchise. It is technically the, let's see, 11th Halloween film. Yeah. But it is just called Halloween, just like the first film and just like the ninth film. Crazy. Nice. And it was decent. Decent sequel that, I guess, for all intents and purposes, drops Halloween 2 through Halloween 2 remake and just pretends it's just a direct sequel from the original.
Right. I am a huge fan of the Halloween movies.
And so was this a steal? Because I'm like, I feel like I'm stealing this.
I almost picked not that one, but I almost picked another one.
Mm.
But yeah.
But it had a colon in it, I bet.
It did. It had a colon. Damn it.
Yeah. All right. What's your number two?
My number two is one of my favorite movies of all time, and it is one of the best sequels of all time, maybe the best sequel of all time. And ooh, I know that
strong words.
I know those are strong words, and I know no one will agree with me. But I am going with 1935, James Whale's The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. I would, it has some strange elements in it. You know, that some of the weirdness, but I think that the actual Frankenstein story itself, the reason I think it's so good is because it's a lot closer to the novel than the first movie was.
I just think that from the first film, and then especially in this one, Karloff really proved himself as a tremendously good actor, you know, especially in the scene with the blind man in the hut. And he's, you know, basically learning to trust a person for the first time. Good stuff.
Yeah, that is good stuff. All right, Ocean. All right. Second pick from you is
the second pick for me. I'm going to stick thematically somewhat with my trailer choice in that it is a straightforward action revenge movie, and it is Desperado. Desperado came out in I believe 1983. 1993 Desperado starring Antonio Ben 95. Thank you. Starring Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek, and it was it's a sequel to the movie The Mariachi,
right.
Which was I think one of Robert Rodriguez's first directorial movies. His very first was
The Mariachi. That's the one he sold his body to science for.
Yes. Yeah. So I picked it because, you know, it's a non-numbered sequel, of course. But then also, to me, it's one of the best guy. When I saw it in college, I thought this was the greatest guy movie I've ever seen. Where it is, you know, the plot is straightforward and simple. It's a nice revenge pick. There's tons and tons of action. It's really all around a great guy movie. So.
I remember it being enjoyable, I remember liking Steve Buscemi, who doesn't he pop up as a kind of a supporting character?
Yes, he does. He starts off the movie with a great scene, and then he shows up for a little bit as he shows up dressed as a priest, although he's not a priest, and then, you know, keeping with the theme of the movie, he gets killed. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
For my second pick, you know, there are a lot on here, and actually one of them I was tempted to put on was the third in your trilogy that you started with there, Ocean. But what I'm going to put on, you know, it was a film that surprised me in a franchise that I thought started strong, and then it had kind of a dip for the third one that was a lot of people didn't like. And it's fine, I guess. But the fourth film, I was like, oh, you know what? They kind of put it back on track, and I think that they ended the story well, I really liked it. It is Shrek Forever After. And I was really tempted to not pick it because I don't think it's called Forever After, but I don't think in their marketing they ever actually did the number four ever after. I may be wrong, but the posters that I saw didn't. So that's my second pick. I don't know. I felt like the whole thing with Rumpelstiltskin and kind of taking everything away, I thought that was actually really clever. I thought they did a good job with that one. So, and there you go. Continuing the trend of Antonio Banderas as well. All right. Final pick. What are you going to say, Ray?
My last pick is one that I picked at the very last minute because I thought of it at the last minute. I'm like, and I had to pick it. And it is Akira Kurosawa's 1962 film Sanjuro, which is a sequel to Yojimbo, which I think are two really remarkable films. And I am really ticked off because I was going to buy the Criterion editions this month during the sale and they were sold out.
Ah, bummer. They look great. And what a pair of films those are. I love them. That's yes, a good pick. Are. I didn't even think of that one. Man. All right. Ocean, last pick.
My last pick is a movie that I first saw. It came out in 1981. Saw it as a young child. And as far as I can remember, I think it's the first sequel I ever saw, even though I did not know that it was a sequel at the time. And it is there's a James Bond movie, For Your Eyes Only. It stars Roger Moore. It was his, it'd be third of his James Bond movies. And so with all James Bond movies, you know, except for the Daniel Craig ones, with all James Bond movies, that you know, they have titles. They're all nice and, you know, nice and singular in their story. They're nice and disposable. You can, you know, you watch them, you see the pattern, and then you can move on to the next one. So I enjoyed it when I was 8. And because of that childhood love of the movie, I still like the movie to this day, and I like it more. I like it more than you should, because there are several problems with the movie, and it is by far not the best James Bond movie ever made. But since it was the first one that I saw, and I really enjoyed it, so I.
Don't be ashamed, sir. There should be no such thing as a guilty pleasure.
Exactly. Yes.
Good pick. I mean, I figured James Bond was going to pop into somebody's list. I had a little rule for myself where I was trying to not pick stuff based on books because so often the books, you know, especially like, I mean, the Sherlock Holmes books and the James Bond books, they didn't number them. And so it's pretty common to not have numbered titles. But for my final pick, I went with another horror film from another big horror franchise that is the one that really was like my horror franchise when I was a kid and growing up. It was the Nightmare on Elm Street series. And the movie I picked was Wes Craven's New Nightmare. It came out in 1994. And what I found so fresh and original about that film is that it was this really kind of like this meta horror movie that was like almost like not even part of the franchise. It was almost like the Freddy Krueger persona was actually plaguing the people in the industry, like Heather Langenkamp, the actress, not Nancy, and Wes Craven, and people who actually had been a part of the films. And I thought that was so interesting, so original. And it made perfect sense then to see Wes Craven go on to make Scream afterwards. So that is my final pick, Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Awesome pick.
Awesome. Yeah, that was a really good movie. I really enjoyed it because the Nightmare on Elm Street series had started kind of going off the rails and became, hey, let's just laugh at how Freddy Krueger kills people. But then the New Nightmare was definitely a nice new take on it. And it was actually the first one that scared me. You know, since, I don't know, I think, three? Which was three? Dream Warriors?
Dream Warriors, yeah.
Dream Warriors was three? Yeah, so three I thought was scary, but then again, you know, I was 10. And then the New Nightmare was definitely one that I thought was a really great horror movie.
Yeah, by the time they got to, I think the one, was it the one right before this, the final nightmare? Is that the one where Roseanne Barr and Tom Arnold pop up in some weird thing? It's just like, what are we doing here? This is like gone off the rails. Yeah. So I'm glad they were able to kind of get things back on track, at least a little bit, briefly. Cool. All right. Well, that's it for our list. No stills. Did you guys have any backups that you want to give shout outs to?
No.
I did. I had Hannibal And you could because as a, being from Silence of the Lambs, although you know you could argue that Silence of the Lambs is a sequel for Manhunter.
Sure.
The obvious ones, which I stayed away from because I thought that would that someone else would pick them, was the Bourne movies. There's the Bourne Supremacy and the Bourne Ultimatum.
Well, you know, I have my personal rule. I don't pick anything we've covered on the show, and of course we've done all the Bourne movies. So
Got it. Okay.
But let's see. I had How to Train Your Dragon, the Hidden World, Chronicles of Riddick. Once Upon a Time in Mexico. I told you I had the one of yours on. The Dark Knight. The last, any of the last three of the Mission Impossible movies. The Great Muppet Caper. And, of course, I feel like it's an honorary list that you have to throw on Piranha 3 Double D on there. It's like, I saw the remake of Piranha 3D, and it was pretty terrible. And then they made a sequel to it, and that's what they called it. I'm like, of course they did. Of course they did. That's just exactly what that should have been called. So I got to give them kudos for that. Anyway. So now we got to put some lists out there for next week. Next week, we're going to be talking about Friday After Next on the show. Neither of you have seen this one.
No, but I do know a few things about the movie, and I have an idea or two for lists.
Okay. What do you have?
Bad guys dressed as Santa Claus.
Okay. like it. What else? You had a couple?
The other one that I had, wasn't there a store in there in the mall that was called Pimps and Hoes or something?
There is a store called Pimps and Hoes.
What about like movies with stores with ridiculous names? Because I can think of several off the top of my head with like just ridiculous names.
Okay.
Store.
Okay. And... was that it, or do you have another one?
That's all I have.
Okay. I put a couple down as options. Films with animated title sequences. Snowless Christmases. And Christmas Crime, which fits actually quite perfectly with your, what was it? Burglars in Santa Claus outfits?
Bad guys or whatever.
Bad guys, yeah.
So having not seen it, is it set during Christmas?
It's a Christmas movie, yes.
Okay. Well, then you... Well, could you make a list of Christmas movies that are unexpected Christmas movies?
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not an expected Christmas movie. Like, really? Right. Okay. That was an interesting choice for them.
Yeah.
I like the Christmas Crime idea. Santa thieves or whatever. Should we put that down?
Yeah, that sounds good. I can think of a few movies that would fit into that.
Which, and I think Christmas Crime, I mean, if they aren't quite dressed up as Santa, it's still, I think either way, you're getting close there.
There you go.
Okay, what was your first one you had?
That was my first idea. My second one was about the stores.
Oh, funny store names.
Right, yes.
I like that one. What do you think, Ocean?
I like it. I think it'd be a challenge. I'd have to think through a lot of movies to figure out what one that I would remember that.
Well, what do you think about the other ones? Animated title sequences or snowless Christmases? Do either of those work?
I think animated title sequences is a great one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know if there'd be probably a lot of overlap between the Snowless Christmas and the Christmas Crime.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, you don't have to have a crime movie to have a Snowless Christmas.
No. Yeah, West Coast.
Christmas in Hawaii. Exactly. Right, exactly. Christmas in Hawaii. Any Australian movie or Southern Hemisphere movie that takes place at Christmas time won't be snowy. Okay. What do you guys think? Snowless Christmases or funny store names?
I'd say Snowless Christmas.
Snowless Christmases would be easier to... Yeah, because I can think of some with that. So I think Snowless Christmases.
Okay. All right, well, there we go. Christmas Crime, Snowless Christmases, and animated title sequences. That should be fun for whoever it is who's on the show next week. We wish you luck. And if you want to get in on voting for next week's list, it's very easy. You just head over to the Show Talk channel in the Next Reel's Discord community. You can get there by going to thenextreel.com and just click the link to Discord where you can become a member and you can get in on the conversations about the list topics and everything else we're talking about over there. You can also visit our merch, the merch store, thenextreel.com/merch. You can head over to the TeePublic store. You can get all sorts of fantastic Next Reel merchandise pieces, including masks right now. And who doesn't want a medical grade face mask? Sorry, who doesn't want a non-medical grade face mask? Because what happens is when you buy one through the Next Reels TeePublic store, TeePublic donates one medical grade face mask to the frontline healthcare workers through Direct Relief. So thank you for supporting us. Mighty thanks to all the doctors and nurses out there. And that's it. So thanks for being here today, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Happy movie watching, everybody.
Indeed. Thanks, everybody. Have a good one. And until next weekend.
I love the conversations that so many of our hosts have had on their shows. Steve and JJ on Trailer Rewind, Ray and Ocean on Silver Linings, even Tommy's short-lived No, No, Wait, Hear Me Out.
And so many films they've discussed started out as a book, a play, or even a TV series.
Well, now you can support our whole family of podcasts by using our new Originals page to buy the original source material used to inspire films covered on our shows.
Just visit thenextreel.com/originals. Your purchases made through our links give us a small commission at no extra cost to you and allow us to keep having these fantastic conversations.
It's a wonderful way to support the show. Producing these podcasts week after week require a ton of work behind the scenes. If you'd like to help support our efforts, try using our Originals page when shopping for books and movies that we've covered.
It's your one-stop shop for Amazon and Apple links where you can buy the book, play, video game, movie, etc., upon which the movie is based.
Original material for Trailer Rewind movies like If Beale Street Could Talk,
The Goldfinch,
Aniara,
or The Two Faces of January.
Or Silver Linings movies like Repo Men, which was based on the Repossession Mambo.
Plus, by using those links to buy books, Amazon and Apple show us a little bit of love, which allows you to support our family of shows with minimal effort.
Visit thenextreel.com/originals. It's a fantastic way to support the show and find a great book to read.
That's right. Head over to thenextreel.com/originals to find your next read and get started today.